call to order the Personnel Legislative and Public Affairs Subcommittee meeting January 7, 2020, 4 p.m. agenda. Roll call.
Fowler?
Here.
Jeff?
Here.
McCormick?
Here.
Chairperson?
Here.
And you want Sapinski to fill in for Grunwald?
Sure.
Here.
Notification of the Open Meetings Act, which is posted on the door at the back of the wall. Before we start the meeting, I'd like to read the copy of the Open Meetings Act, Nebraska Revised State Statute 84-1407 through 84-1414, is posted on the back wall of the meeting room. Prior to returning to the agenda for tonight's meeting, I would like to announce the procedure that will be used for this meeting. With respect to each agenda item, the directors will first hear staff proposals and recommendations. Then the public will be given an opportunity to speak to the item. Lastly, the directors will discuss the item and take action. We ask that the public not interrupt the directors' discussion and action. Thank you. Item number four. We have a motion.
A motion.
Second.
Roll call.
Jeff?
Yes.
McCormick?
Yes.
Sapinski?
Yes.
Fowler?
Yes.
And Chairperson?
Aye. Item number five, have proof of publication of tonight's meeting will become part of the permanent record. Item number six, review and recommendation on 2020 affirmative action policy. Tracy Thompson and Kelly.
Lorraine.
Carry it over.
Oh, good afternoon, directors. So I'm Tracy Thompson with the district. This is Kelly Lawrence from Barrett Home. So for your consideration today is the review and recommendation of the district's 2020 affirmative action policy. So we'll do a year-end review and look at the compliance actions that were taken this year. This is pretty much the same as it is the last 2 years. So as you see in the memo, we've done different, there's no changes to the policy from the last couple of years. The same reports and communications have been completed for the compliance requirements, such as notifying our subcontractors and suppliers that they need to adhere to affirmative action. We display all of our equal opportunity posters. We notify management twice a year about the district's affirmative action obligations. We've completed the VETS 4212 report and an EEO-4 survey certification. These are basically that are sent to the government. And we continue to advertise all our positions, openings through Nebraska Works, the Voc Rehab Office, our website, the NARD website, and the local newspaper of the servicing community where the position is being filled. So, we did have seven different personnel actions in 2019. We had a retirement from the accounting assistant retired from full-time work. We replaced that person with a part-time accounting assistant. Our water superintendent retired from full-time work, and that resulted in a promotion from our operator to the superintendent, and those are both full-time. And then we hired an operator to take that. The promoted operator spot. And then we had a temporary two-year grant-sponsored position up at the Blair office for a conservation program support specialist. The last thing we had, and this is going to carry over into 2020, we had a water supply operator district maintenance tech resign in September. That position was advertised in 2019, however, it's being filled in 2020. And that will also result in a promotion and a job fill. So that's short and sweet and to the point. And if you have any questions, we'd be happy to address your concerns.
Is anyone from the public wish to speak to this item? Directors? We can have a motion.
I move that we accept this Barrett Home.
Second that.
Roll call.
Okay. Jeff? McCormick?
Yes.
Sapinski?
Yes.
Fowler?
Yes.
And Chairperson?
Aye. And I think that completes the personnel legislative.
Thank you.
Larry?
Thank you, Director Conley. We've moved on to the ad hoc consultant selection subcommittee, RFP for construction stormwater inspections, Southern Sarpy Watershed Partnership. Now, this meeting is called to order. Notification of the Open Meetings Act posting and announcement of meeting procedure. Quorum call.
Conley?
Here.
Lipinski?
Here.
Teaser?
Here.
McCormick?
Here.
And Chairperson?
Here. Adoption of the agenda.
Hello.
Second.
Lipinski?
Yes.
Teaser?
Yes.
McCormick?
Yes.
Conley?
Aye.
And Chairperson?
Yes. Proof of publication of meeting notice. It is posted, and I do want to read this. Copy of the Open Meetings Act posted on the back wall of the meeting room. Prior to turning to the agenda for tonight, this afternoon's meeting, I would like to announce the procedure that will be used for this meeting. With respect to each agenda item, the directors will first hear the staff proposals and recommendations. Then the public will be given the opportunity to speak to the item. Lastly, the directors will discuss the item and take action. And we ask that the public not interrupt the directors' discussion and action. Thank you. Item number 6, review and recommendation on professional services contract with JEO for Southern Sarpy Watershed Partnership Construction Stormwater Inspection Services, Lori Laster.
I think I win for like the longest name ever. So on December 5th, the ad hoc committee selected JEO Consulting Group to provide the service for the Southern Sarpy Watershed Partnership. These inspections are required as part of their municipal storm sewer system permit. And previously, the City of Omaha had been providing these inspections on behalf of the communities, but they were not receiving any compensation for that. Development has grown enough in the Southern Sarpy area that Omaha feels they can no longer cover that. So we needed to find someone to take care of that. For this first year, we are using JEO Consulting Group. We negotiated a contract. The total not to exceed is $163,590. This covers monthly inspections of each active construction site and any complaints received about sediment from those construction sites. They will also do an inspection at that time. They will prepare a monthly summary report of all inspections done and any recommendations that they make to the communities in the event of a violation. And they'll also prepare an annual report of all of their work to be included in each community's report for their permit. Melissa Campbell with JEO is here also, and we can answer any questions that you have.
Right. Anybody
move
from...
Move staff recommendation.
Thank you. Okay, there's a motion. We now have a motion.
Second.
And a second. Anybody from the public wish to speak on this item? Staff. Directors. Director Jack.
Yes, so this contract will be paid out of the Southern Sarpy Watershed Partnership Fund. That fund is comprised of contributions from each member community and watershed fees that are collected in that area. As part of a breakdown, most of what we contribute right now is going to cover the watershed management plan work that FIRA is doing, and this will be covered by the watershed management fees that are collected on new development.
Yeah. Director McCormick.
Is this an hourly contract, or is it unit price, or how do they break that down?
Hourly, not to exceed. So they'll bill by the actual hours that they spend.
And just depending on who shows up, if it's a tech or if it's an engineer or whoever's got the hours,
yes.
It's a different rate.
Mm-hmm.
And I assume those rates are within in line with
yes.
the other proposal or what you typically find. That's all I had.
What else? All right. Roll call.
Caesar?
Yes.
McCormick?
Yes.
Conley? Sapinski?
Yes.
And Chairperson?
Yes. We are adjourned.
We'll go to the programs, projects, and operations subcommittee meeting January 7th, 2020 agenda. Before starting tonight's meeting, I'd like to. John just said I don't have to. So
you just say you.
You
already read it.
We're already ready. Nobody's come new into the room. Quorum call.
Fowler?
Here.
Jeff?
Here.
Teaser?
Item number 4, adoption of agenda.
So move. Second.
Motion.
Jeff?
Yes.
Sapinski?
Yes.
Teaser?
Yes.
Fowler?
Yes.
And Chairperson?
Item number 5, we have proof of publication of tonight's meeting. Item number 6, review and recommendation on contract with Dicon Explosive Demolition Corp. with the Ice Jam Explosive Services. Amanda Grant.
Afternoon. So before you tonight for consideration is a contract with Dicon Explosive Corporation, and they're out of Tulsa, Oklahoma. And it's for the removal of ice jams. And this all came about, there's an interlocal agreement that was initially started in 1994, with a little background, as a result of the 93 floods, when there was a lot of ice jam flooding. There was not really anyone specified to pull the trigger on certain things that could, you know, help make, you know, announcements about the flooding, do something to help alleviate the ice jams with the explosives. There wasn't any one person that was in charge of that, and it was a bit chaotic, as I hear. So in 1994, they put together an interlocal agreement, which involves Lower Platte North, Lower Platte South, and the Papio NRDs, and then Douglas County, Sarpy County, Cass County, and Saunders County. So those entities collectively work together, and that interlocal gives the NRD the responsibility to administer an ice jam explosives contract. Now, things were done a lot differently in 1994. You had crazy folks that would throw dynamite out of a helicopter. We still have crazy folks that do that, but it costs a lot more, and there's a lot more involved in the process right now. So since 94, we've been administering that, and then there's a fund where $150,000 is distributed amongst those entities and kept in a fund to help pay for that should that happen. Since 2008, we've used Dicon, and they've come up twice since we've had them under contract. And the way it works is we pay a retainer every year. Then we pay, there's a standby notice, which means the potential is high or there's an ice jam forming, and that gives them about 72 hours to put some additional insurance in place and do the things they need to do, get their people lined up. After 72 hours, we can give them mobilization notice. That means they have to be here as soon as possible and start blasting. And there's, at mobilization, there's an advance that has been given to them in years past. So they've come twice, and the contract expired January 1st of this year, and we just didn't think this was a good year to try something new. They're very responsive, they're experts, and now they've run through the whole process twice and gotten themselves up here and ready to go. They've seen the ice jams. Both times they've broken free right while they were standing there, so they really have a good understanding of what we need to do. So we would like to renew the contract with them. There's not a lot different in the contract this year other than the dollar amounts of things. They haven't updated a lot of their fees in 5 years, and they're just everything went up a little bit. The retainer is probably the most significant. It went from $2,000 to $7,000, and that's not even they are absorbing the cost of the helicopter pilot's retainer. And I will say we have not paid that in the past, but it is, I think, very essential to this whole process to have the helicopter pilot so close. He's in Elkhorn, and they have contracted between the Oklahoma company and the gentleman in Elkhorn. And he has, for that dollar amount, what he does is he keeps everything ready to go. He's got all his FAA plans and permits and all of that in place. And sometimes that can be a spot where we run into a little bit of an issues getting that lined up if we need it. So I think probably that's well worth the money. Otherwise, there's, you know, a list of things. Not much of it has changed, really. Like I said, they updated insurance costs went up. And then the other bigger change is they're upon mobilization, they're given an advance, and it's always $5,000. They've asked for $10,000. Anytime they head up here, we spend well over $10,000. So I don't really know that that impacts what we pay as much, just when they get paid. Have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them, but would recommend that you recommend to the board approval of the contract. It's a 5-year contract with Dicon Explosives.
I'd like to move staff recommendation.
I'll move adoption of the staff recommendation. But I do have some questions for them.
Anyone from the public wish to speak to the audience?
John, yesterday I was talking about if we need to hold them over an extra day or two, did we get a determination of what they would charge us?
Right. So we have, as an exhibit to the contract, they fill out all these unit prices. And so we pay their a per diem based on Douglas County rates for meals. We pay their lodging. It's pretty standard. If we request that they stay, we have outlined what those costs would be.
They're not terrible. Not for to have that insurance that they're going to be here.
I'd rather have them here than not here.
Than to send them back and then have to bring them back.
Other questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had a question. Now, I'm trying to remember... Last year, we needed their services, but I think there was a storm or something that was grounding them. And I know that last year was not a normal year by any means, and they eventually made it. Or, you know, I'd give you an update on that. So
yeah, so I guess that's also one reason we recommend them. I mean, it was... Obviously, when we're having really horrible weather and flooding, you know, and it was, in this case, pretty widespread, they couldn't fly. Well, one flew in from Georgia and made it, and the other folks couldn't make it. They were grounded in Denver. You know, flights to Omaha have a lot of different layovers and things, and they got stuck there. Against my judgment, they then rented a car and then tried to drive here when I-80 was closed. But they were more determined than I was. They made a route through Kansas. Anyway, they made it here, and they understand the importance of what we have going on. And it's just, I think we try to outline a lot of things, but every year it's going to just be its own sort of crazy, and that was last year's, just trying to even get them here. But they were determined, and they did.
Roll call.
Yes.
Yes.
Fowler?
Yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
Item number 7, review and recommendation on resolution for participation in the district's multi-hazard mitigation plan.
So in 2006, the district started coordinating a multi-jurisdictional, multi-hazard mitigation plan. This plan is required by FEMA in order for communities to be eligible for certain grant funding and certain public assistance funding. And the plan is very lengthy, and it requires a lot of demographic information that is similar across the district, and so it doesn't really make sense for each individual community to do their own plan. So we coordinate this, and it has to be updated every 5 years. And so the last time it was updated was 2016, and the update will be due in 2021. So we received a planning grant from FEMA to cover 75% of the cost of this, and we're just kicking that off now. We received notice in October that we were successful with our grant. JEO Consulting Group was hired to help us plan with the plan. And so this is really the first step in that they require acknowledgement from each participating community's governing body that the plan is being completed and that they are participating in said plan. So there's a whole lengthy resolution with a whereas and therefore that needs to be adopted that acknowledges, again, that this agency is a participant in this plan. We will be having meetings throughout the district, at least one round in the spring and probably one round late fall, to gather input from various community groups, various agencies. Those will be open to the public, advertised to the public. And of course, we will let you know once those meetings are planned. So staff recommends that the board adopt the resolution as presented.
Thank you. We have a motion.
I'm going to accept.
Second.
Recommendation.
A motion and a second. Anyone from the public wish to speak to the directors?
Who or what entities are currently utilizing this hazard mitigation?
Yes.
A lot of it would be in my sub-district.
Yes, I can send you that off the top of my head.
This includes school districts?
Yes. So cities, counties, villages, townships, school districts, and other special district governments are eligible to participate.
So currently, you advertise or send out notices to all the different entities that we have?
Yes. So we have sent out not this yet. So we have a smaller planning team that has been notified that has representatives from each county. And then myself and JEO, we've done that. And we have a much larger mailing list. We definitely send it to the mayor or the board chairperson. We try to get planning, people, public works, parks, roads, any of those kind of people that would potentially have some sort of mitigation project. So the list is quite extensive.
Is that sent out yearly or every 5 years?
So every 5 years, because we only update it every 5 years. And so if you don't participate fully, so we have this resolution, then there will be some input that's required from each community. And then once the plan is approved by FEMA, each community has to formally adopt it. And if you don't complete all of those steps, then you kind of have to wait until the next 5 years.
So there's a window of time you have to get in on it. Is that correct?
Yes.
And we don't know when those open meetings are going to be at this point?
No, not yet. They haven't been scheduled.
But you know that also?
Oh, yes. We will let all board members know when those meetings are.
And we'll send everybody that list, too, so they can see what.
Questions from directors? Roll call.
Teaser?
Yes.
Fowler?
Yes.
Jack?
Yes.
Yes.
And Chairperson.
Hi. Item number 8, review and recommendation on conservation agreement, ENS complaint. I will just a moment.
Good evening. Okay, so back in October, it's evening now. 3:30 is my quit. Back in October, we brought our erosion and sediment complaint for Mr. Cornwell. And we are now reaching the phase of developing our plan for completion and our conservation agreement. I've been meeting with Mr. Cornwell, and we've discussed a whole wide array of options.
Bill, if you could scroll, was there a map on there by chance?
So there we go. That's what I'm looking for.
So currently, the farm sits, you can almost kind of see the old terraces right here. There's that would be a terrace there and a terrace right about in here somewhere and here. So meeting with Andy Bonenkamp from the NRCS and Todd Cornwell, we developed a plan that we believe will get him down below his soil loss criteria And what we will be doing is adding an additional footage to the end of this terrace, another one down below here above Mr. Erickson's house, and extending this terrace across above, I'm not sure who lives here, and adding another one down below here. And these blue lines represent the new pipes that will be installed. So what we're looking at doing as far as time frame for construction is we think that we're going to have a better solution as far as soil stability and issues for Mr. Erickson if we use our summer program. And what that does is it helps the farmer in the fact that he can still plant a crop, a small grain. And Mr. Cornwell raises cattle, so he's chosen to plant oats. So he'll plant the oats sometime in April, May. Usually about mid-April is the ideal planting season for oats. He'll harvest those oats around the 1st of July. And once the oats are harvested, we will actually go out and then do the construction of the terraces. And then once the terraces are completed post-construction, we're going to actually seed a cover crop out there. And that will help in the fact that, you know, if you build a terrace system in July and it sits bare soil until the next spring before he plants his crop, and the crop doesn't grow up till basically a year later before you get some cover back on the ground. We've seen it be very effective with doing the cover crops post-construction, and not only in soil health but in soil stability, and the fact that you will put almost, you know, an annual rye almost looks like grass in your lawn. So that is kind of the resolution we've come up with. The final step for the board is to vote on the plan, the completion date, give your input questions, and then move forward with construction, and then that meets his compliance as far as our sediment erosion policies. That's all I have.
Okay, thank you very much. So we can have a motion.
I'll move for staff recommendation.
Second.
Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item?
Good evening, Jeremy Hollenbeek from the Baird Home Firm. First, let me apologize. I had some oral procedure this morning, and they assured me that I would be fine this afternoon, but I find that it's a little painful and a little swollen still, so I'll be speaking a little slower than normal. But I did want to speak. I represent the Erickson's. Also represent the Andrasex and the Shears, who are also have a active complaint about an adjacent property, also a Cornwell property. And I was here in December before you. Speaking about that, I just want to speak. I think it'll be 5 to 10 minutes, but I want to talk about the plan, obviously, that has been sort of put forth and agreed to, but also. First, just how we got here, and underline the importance of the district and the committee and its role. The Erickson's experienced excess runoff on several days back in May and June of 2019. And after that, attempts were made, you know, informally to work with Mr. Cornwell, and obviously, that didn't work. So point one and underlying the importance of the committee is we tried to do this on our own. It didn't work. Only by coming to this body are we able to get some results. The other thing that's important to emphasize is that, and you all may be aware, the rules that govern this and the plan itself, in fact, say that once the plan is approved and thereafter, as long as Mr. Cuomo complies with the plan, he's deemed to be in compliance with the settlement laws, settlement runoff maximum allowable limit law. And that's important because whatever is in the plan then has to be sufficient. And if it's not, you know, we have this nightmare scenario where he's complying with the plan, but there's still excess runoff. And, you know, we're forced to do inefficient things like come here and file another complaint and you hear from me more, and I'm sure you don't want to do that. So I just want to now turn to what's sort of in the plan, because the plan itself, if you've seen it, is, you know, it's 4 pages, but the actual part that discusses what's going to be implemented is like a series of six or seven words. Again, because compliance with the plan is deemed to be compliance with the law, we need to know what's in the plan. The plan needs to have some more detail. We've worked with counsel to the NRD to try and add some detail, and I'm frankly not familiar with the process if an updated written plan will get put into place and submitted to the board on or the district on Thursday, or that's a live question. I don't know, Brandon.
Yeah, Justin contacted Mr. Cornwell. One of the requests was putting milestones as far as doing the
cover. Right.
Thursday.
Okay.
That's pretty much the only stuff discussed with Mr. Cornwell.
Okay. So I do, if you just indulge me, but it's important to us to get on the record and into that agreement, sort of what's in the plan that's beyond what is just in the written plan that's already been generated and circulated. First of all, Brent did mention the milestones, and you know the actual governing rules require the plan to have a schedule to it as to when things will be completed. The proposed plan just says by September 1st, which, you know, is a milestone, it's fine. But we don't want to be in a position of being unable to say that Mr. Cornwell is not complying with the plan. If, in fact, he's not complying with the plan, we don't want to just have to sit on our hands till September. So a couple things that we discussed, and my understanding is that Mr. Cornwell's agreed to, is that this plant of the cover crop and oats will be by no later than May 1st, 2020. The harvest of the summer crop will be approximately mid to late July. There's no hard date to accommodate weather, but an approximate date. And then the build-outs of the terraces will be no later than September 1st completed, and that the plant crop, the cover crop of rye that's going to be done after that, I guess we didn't agree to a date on that. We'd like to have a date on when that would be completed. There's also, I just want to emphasize, because it's not, can you
put that picture up again?
Yes, please. Justin, you know, covered this, but we are thankful that the terraces that are being built on this scheme are, they're going to build out the existing terraces, but there's also some extensions and some new terraces as well. The new outlets that are going in, I don't know that this needs, we would like it in the plan, but my understanding is that this is just a schematic, not the final design, and as much as possible, if the NRD staff could coordinate with us and the Ericssons, and in particular, we did discuss. I discussed with Brent that middle outlet there, that's pointed directly at the Ericsson's property. If we could work with Mr. Erickson, if it's directed to the left of that outbuilding, there are natural waterways and a culvert actually that's been built there. We also would like to get, and my understanding is that that's fine, that coordination can and will happen. We're obviously the complaint was filed with respect to settlement runoff. If the water is drained up top there at the terraces and comes down, you know, there might be an issue as well with water in terms of unreasonable increases to the volume or velocity of water coming down. And so we definitely want to keep an eye on that. And I just want to put on the record that is a concern of ours. And the cover crop program, It's our understanding, or I was told that after this first season or year of doing first the oats, and then once the terraces are completed, the oats are harvested, and then putting in the rye, that is, as of now, just a one-year commitment by Mr. Cornwell, and that after that he has the option to go back to corn or do whatever.
Is that correct?
Yes. So obviously that sort of is a concern in terms of if that's very helpful, but, you know, is only a one-year temporary plan, part of the plan, which leads me to, you know, what's not in the plan. You know, there was some discussion about silt ponds. There are certainly a number of other measures that are on the Papio on the rules and regulations that have been put forth. There's a number of permanent and temporary solutions. Obviously, you know, as a representative of both the Erickson's but also the Shears and Undersex, who with the same farmer are already on their second complaint, I don't want to be back here having to file another complaint because the measures either, you know, as implemented just simply aren't sufficient, or, you know, they're implemented and they in the case of the Undersex and the Shears, there were terraces that didn't withstand, you know, some weather this past year, and that was a contributory factor. So, you know, we would like the plan to include some sort of monitoring responsibility by either the NRD or Mr. Cornwell, so that it's not simply, you know, once these terraces are built out and waterways are put in, it's just assumed that it's working. That there be some testing to see that, to confirm that it is working. I mean, if there's not that kind of monitoring, all we can do is file another complaint. That seems really inefficient to me. So we would like the plan to include some sort of monitoring. And then I would just say again that the comprehensive measures that are available, you know, I hope that what's been proposed does the job. But I think, given our experience, we're a little skeptical. And we would urge, I know a number of you are experienced, a number of you were throwing out ideas when we were last here in December. You have the authority to push for other things in the plan. And we want the most comprehensive plan that's possible. I think that covers what I wanted to cover, but okay. That's all I had. I really appreciate your time. And if you have any questions for me, or
let's see if anyone else wishes to speak to the item. We can have a motion on this. From the board.
Have a motion.
Directors.
I have several questions, I guess, but are we going to vote on something tonight, or do we have to?
We can vote on this and then provide an amended plan with the milestones that. But if we're looking for additional things.
Right. it just seems to me. Can't start working on this month anyway, so there's still some time to get it right with all parties. It seems.
I would say that the agreement in place as far as the milestones, it's already there. It's just putting it actually in the agreement. We're not really changing the substance. I think we can move forward. Items. I mean, the direction. They're seeking additional.
See, that's why I'm confused if he's actually suggesting that.
You know, as far as the installation of silt pond, silt fence, other things outside of the conservation plan, those aren't things that are required by the NRCS to get them below their allowable soil loss. You know, if the board chooses to go that route, you know, you're obviously talking more additional costs for the landowner, other things that I would say probably really kind of overstep the bounds of the NRCS a little bit on the engineering side. You know, as the NRD, we administer this program policies, but we really follow the guidance of the federal government. And so that's really what this is this in their calculations and the programs they run, this gets them to his allowable soil loss. You know, like the cover crop installation post-construction actually isn't an NRCS requirement. That's something that Cornwell has chosen on his own to do in addition above the plan. That is just kind of an additional measure he's willing to take on. I think, you know, the plan that we have is pretty solid. I think, you know, the timing of the construction, if you look at the northern site with the issues we had on that, I think that maybe was a little bit rushed. We hurried up and built it in the spring. Had a lot of other factors that really contributed to the failures. I think, you know, if I could revisit that field, I'd build that one in the summer too, because I think we just have our best chance of, you know, not hindering the farmer to where he still gets a crop this year of some sort. He gets maximum cost share dollars through the federal government and us. And we've reestablished that soil health and soil stability, which is what we were lacking on the other job. I think all those measures in place and kind of the good faith that Cornwell has put forward is, you know, a good sign that things are going to progress to where we want them to. So that's kind of my quick thoughts on it. But as far as, like, the monitoring that they're requesting, you know, that would be at the discretion of you guys. From what Brent and I and everybody else have read, that isn't really a requirement. But that kind of goes back to farm compliance and what the FSA administers. You know, if they have excessive erosion in their fields, they also, that's where the teeth come from, is the farm program. So there is some, I'll say, indirect monitoring that'll be done by myself. I mean, I'll be driving by this all the time looking at it, I can tell you that. So, but if the board chooses to do that, we would gladly, you know, reevaluate, develop a new plan, bring it back to you guys. So.
Thank you. Justin, you had mentioned you were exploring some options for CRP for Cornwell for long term.
Those aren't out the window yet.
Not out the window yet?
Nope.
Got ryegrass for a year. It's that period after that I think they're concerned about.
Yep. You know, and obviously I can definitely understand the concerns with some of what you see on the northern side, but I'm still working with Mr. Cornwell. Obviously that's totally voluntary on him. But we're looking at, I ran CRP scenarios for him, where he would qualify and what programs we could get him into, and I've given him all that information. So really, the ball's in his court on that one.
How many acres is this, do you remember?
That's about 20 acres total. And, you know, the CRP rental rate that he looked at was $200 an acre.
You know what he farms total, roughly?
I couldn't even guess. Terry, I don't know, maybe 1,500 acres.
Probably 1,000 to 1,500.
Thank you.
Yep.
Any questions from directors?
Can you identify on that map, just so you can, for my recollection, where each homeowner lives?
The only one that's involved with this current one is Mr. Erickson, and this is his house, his outbuilding, and his pool. This gentleman here, I've never spoken to, and I couldn't even tell you his name.
Russell?
Okay.
Where's Undercheck's house?
It would be. Okay, it's off the map, but basically, if you went straight, it'd be up in here somewhere.
But this is a different. Okay, yeah.
Yeah. Well, now you can. Yeah, but it's basically up in here. It's okay. It's the northern.
I wanted to make sure I was looking at the same thing when I went out there to look at. This isn't it. So.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No. Good. If you go to Mark's house, you make that left and follow it.
Okay. So. Thanks.
Any other questions?
Just one more. So, are you negotiating something with their attorney yet, or is this settled? Or?
Milestone. Yeah. I think everybody's agreed to the milestone.
By Thursday. So we're voting this specificity on Thursday when the.
And it's what Jeremy read off.
And diverting the outlet. Yeah, and that, and you know, as far as the outlet locations, things of that. I mean, obviously, I'll make sure during installation that we get it. I mean, these are just basically lines for estimates and quantities. But yeah, I mean, when we install that tile, we could probably shoot it.
Tile was moved.
Yeah, we can turn it. We can turn it right there.
Divert that water away from his building, and that would be a.
Those things are fairly flexible. Even they're fairly. You can actually flex them over, so that wouldn't be a problem. That's totally doable.
That's all the questions. We'll have roll call.
Fowler?
Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
Sidensky?
Yes.
Teaser?
Yes.
And Jefferson.
Aye. Thank you for coming. Thanks for the information. Item number 9, review and recommendation on property rights acquisition from Union Pacific to Weston Douglas County Trail, Eric Williams.
Good afternoon, everyone. Bill, if you can pull up the map. This is the Weston Douglas County Trail, which we've talked about a number of times over a number of years. This is the area map in Valley to show you where we are again. School is on the west side, so we connect from the school across the railroad tracks and the old highway over to the YMCA, then also south down out of town. The plans have been submitted to NDOT to move into the right-of-way acquisition. During that discussion, we've been talking with Union Pacific Railroad. You can see there running parallel to the highway. They actually own the land of the highway. They had leased it to NDOT when it was still a highway before the new 275 was constructed. But UP still owns the land that is underneath of West Reichmuth Road. If you can go to the next page, Bill. During discussion of the, and then zoom out a little bit so we can see the entire thing. During the discussion with Union Pacific during the right-of-way, they did an additional review and requested a change to the structure of the bridge, which we had previously brought a contract change with EGA, and the pier that's just to the right of the mouse right now, that elevation view. Actually, I've got this. This pier right here in the center was moved to allow additional distance, so you can see the center line of the current tracks are here. Leave additional distance for a future track to be constructed by UP if they decide to do that. And so we did already redesign the structure in order to move the pier and accommodate for UP's request there. In finalizing the review of the updated plans after the pier has been moved, UP has two additional comments. One is that their kind of general review of structures crossing their property asks for management of the water. That's not really applicable in this situation, but they don't have great ability for variance in their policy. So rain is currently falling directly down, lands on the tracks and on the road, which is all there right away, falls, sits on the ground, it's in valley, it's very flat. When constructed, rain would fall onto the bridge. There's a little bit of a slope from the center of the bridge, but in general, rain would continue to fall basically onto the bridge and directly down below the bridge. However, if there is a future problem with drainage from the bridge onto UP's property, they would request that the NRD then take action to mitigate any consequences of the rain. We don't expect that to happen because the design of the bridge doesn't have a curb and gutter system, so we're not concentrating water down to one location. We don't really foresee any possibility that there would be damages to UP's property from rain falling onto the bridge and then falling down onto the UP property below, but they've requested that we take responsibility for that if it does come up. Secondly, in the event that they build an additional track here, that would mean that this pier is close enough that a crash barrier would be necessary so that if a train derailed, it would protect the structure from being impacted by the train car, and they have standards for how a crash barrier or crash wall is designed. But that isn't necessary right now because it's not close enough for their guidelines to need a crash barrier at this time. So in order to finalize the property rights that we need to construct the bridge over UP's property as designed here, the purchase agreement would include two considerations. One, that in the event that future water damages were found to be occurring because of the bridge, we would agree to make changes to the bridge to manage that stormwater. And two, in the event that UP decides to add an additional track in the future, we would then agree to construct a crash barrier to protect the pier from a train derailment, essentially, and that would prevent the, I think the idea is to prevent the structure from falling down onto the train is why they want it. I talked back with the structural engineers, and this afternoon they did get a response back. The potential cost of a crash barrier or crash wall is a little bit difficult to estimate because we haven't done a full design on it, but on the order of about $34,000 is the expected potential cost. Now, we have no indication that UP would actually construct an additional track here and trigger the need for this barrier, but the timeline for railroads is extremely long, and so they want some assurance that in 50 or 100 years, if they put another track in, they would know that we would have agreed to build a barrier at that time. With those two conditions, we would sign the purchase agreement and NDOT would finalize the property rights necessary. And I believe this is the last parcel in order to take this plan to bidding and construct the project. So those two conditions, according to a legal review, we need authorization for John to execute a purchase agreement with those two potential future responsibilities designated to the NRD. No current responsibility, but those are potential future responsibilities, so we need authorization to allow John to carry out that agreement with UP and finalize the property rights.
But that's in the staff recommendation, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm sorry. Yes.
I have a recommendation.
Motion on this.
Second. Motion on the second. Anyone from the public wish to speak to it? Directors? Director?
So let me understand this correctly. The rain is going to fall down, and this is a 10-foot wide bridge?
The structure might be a little wider, but yes.
Okay. So if water goes over the edge and there seems to be a little trickle on the ground, Eric's going to get out there with a shovel and just kind of... or maybe someone else in our staff, and fill in those holes where it trickled down.
The proposed design that they suggested was some kind of a gutter system to catch the water and transport it over to the edge and drop it down.
But shuffling around, there's rocks and all. I've been on railroad tracks, and, that would solve it.
We think it's pretty unlikely that there's going to be any damage due to rainwater from the bridge.
So the board, 100 years from now, when they decide to put another, we're going to worry about that later, right?
Yeah.
Yep. Who's the youngster around here? Anyway, it just baffles me when UP comes up with this kind of stuff.
And as a reminder, neither of these have a current cost. There is no financial obligation right now. It's just the potential
future. Okay.
No change to anything that we're currently doing.
Any other questions?
Did you get a Christmas card from the UP this year, by chance?
Did not.
All right. Work
but
on the next
Brent and I will be following up with them.
We did get a calendar.
Probably not.
If no other questions, roll call.
Yes.
Sinsky?
Yes.
Teaser?
Yes.
Teller?
Yes.
And Chairperson.
All right. I think we're adjourned.